is a deep recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.
Hey, man, what's your name?
And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday.
Oh, it's Friday.
hey, I'm having trouble with this seeing eye. And it wants to do whatever it wants to do. Yeah, maybe that'll work, Sandy.
A couple of techno wizards here.
Yeah, there it is. All right. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-9. I said that.
Yeah, you did. We can keep doing it. The show will be long and dull. Go ahead.
It's not going to be dull.
No.
That's absolutely for sure it won't be dull. It's Friday. That means... Friday Williams with my co-host Sandy Williams. How you doing, Sandy?
All right. You slow down here. We'll get this going.
I was doing fine until the camera was
kerfuffled there.
Yeah, kerfuffled.
Yeah.
That's Judge Judy's favorite. That was one of her favorite kerfuffle. You know.
I never appeared before Judge Judy.
And I used to wonder what does kerfuffle mean? And she would be so articulate with the way she pronounced it, Judge Judy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little kerfuffle. And I'm like, kerfuffle? All right. So, but anyway, hey, good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
All right, man. So, Sandy, what a difference a day makes. Who sung that? What a difference a day makes, 24 hours in a day. You don't. We don't know.
So no.
You don't know everything, then.
No, I'm far, far, far from that.
But what a difference a day makes! Look at the sun, man.
The sun is out, but now it's icy and slippery out here.
Yeah, I mean it's icy.
Yeah.
True enough. But the sun.
Winter is coming.
Yeah. Man,
it's like Game of Thrones.
Blue skies and the sun. Just seems different, man, than what we had yesterday, right? The last 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was horrible the last 2 days. That the ice and, that's real ice.
It is real ice. But what's interesting is, you know, this terrible storm was threatened. And we did have a storm. But it wasn't like god awful. I mean, it wasn't like any of us have experienced in our lifetime in terms of bad snowstorms, and now we have, 4 inches accumulated on the ground or something?
Yes.
5 inches? So, I mean, just like all things, the news exaggerates what it is that's going to happen or going on. So the news, you know what's particularly easy to exaggerate is a weather forecast. It hasn't happened yet, so people can jump up and down and tell us what an awful thing is going to happen. It gets our attention. We watch the weather now. Glued to the weather until it either happens or doesn't happen.
Well, I think if you ask the people in Minnesota, they would say,
"Yes, it came true."
Yeah, it came true, and certain parts of the state of Wisconsin,
it did come true. Maybe it's just we here in Milwaukee. We've ducked it a number of times all winter. So.
Yeah, we really did. But this stuff is some serious ice. It looks like snow, but it's ice. And clearly it's going to take a while. We're going to have 40 degrees in, a couple of days. And some of that ice will melt away, but that's ice. Rock hard ice. Where was I going to go?
I don't know, but we're going to move on from the weather here. I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, I wanted to. I was talking about.
What have you been watching on TV?
Yeah, man, I was watching Tony Soprano, and I haven't seen The Sopranos in I don't know how many years, because my wife has this. Something called IPTV. I wonder if there's anybody else in the audience with IPTV. IPTV has 8,900 channels.
You know, we were talking off the air. I find, you know, I do streaming now. I don't have cable.
Yeah, streaming. Yeah,
and so through streaming, you have all these choices. You know, you have the applications that you can, you can use HBO. You can use
right. It's got all
I
that.
Find that I could maybe go to my grave trying to figure out what to watch next. Yeah, I find myself going from app to app, looking at. I go to Prime and I say, okay, what are the movies I can watch here? Now I go to Netflix. Okay, what can I watch here? Jump to HBO. It's a never ending possibilities. Paralysis.
APTV has 16,000 movies.
Hmm.
And I'm like, 16,000 movies.
Well, Netflix has got to have at least has more than that, probably. Prime TV has a whole bunch. Apple TV. I mean, my God, I've got about 8 streaming services or 9 that I can access, and I get on a treadmill and say, okay, what am I going to watch? And I've already walked for an hour before I figure out what it is I might turn on.
So what is this? It's a little thing.
The Roku.
No, it has all of these things on it. It's a, I don't know what this thing is.
Is it the device through which you stream stuff?
Yes.
Well, Roku is a device. We've got Fire Stick. That's the Amazon device.
And the Fire Stick has Roku. It has all those things on it.
Yes.
And then you add this 16,000 on APTV. And I don't care. You can think of a movie when, you know, before you were here.
It's like a kid in a candy store, and you don't know what to buy.
So the last week, I don't know what's been going on with me, man. What is it called? Where you talk to Alexa? Alexa. James Cagney movie.
You realize that everyone now who's listening to this show, who has an Alexa speaker in their room, just had Alexa respond to what you had to say. we could finish this by talking about Siri. I could say, you know, Siri, turn on all the lights. Okay. I just exerted a lot of influence around the place.
I don't know. Hey, James Cagney movies. Okay.
Earl.
Mitch.
Earl, you shouldn't talk about James Cagney movies. Everyone, either... Nobody who is listening understands who James Cagney is.
I know.
Or the people who do understand are as old as we are.
I think that's probably what our listening audience is, right?
Yeah, Jimmy Cagney, most of us would call him.
And then last night it was Robert Mitchum movies.
Oh, Robert Mitchum.
So these are the movies that I'm watching.
Yeah. Hey,
Robert Ryan movies. Something's going on with me. I don't know what it is. But all those movies are 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, that's what was on TV were movies, you know, they were old movies then, okay? It was movies from the 40s. You couldn't turn on the TV without having a Cary Grant movie ready to be watched. You know, he was the most frequently served up.
So, Sandy, I watch those movies more than I do any newer movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just love the way they made the movies back then and the black and white part of it. It's kind of waxes nostalgic. I mean, that's the kind. I've been in that kind of mood. But anyway, it's time to move on from that, man.
It started out with The Sopranos, gangster movies. You apparently are in a gangster mood right now.
Yeah, gangsters.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot to talk about this morning, Sandy. As always, I don't want to begin. I want to begin. Who's responsible for the train derailment?
Well, ultimately, here's the deal with things like trains, planes, and even automobiles, is that, you know, ultimately the person operating it is responsible for it. The person building the things has responsibility for it. But all of those things are subject to government regulations, and the regulations are supposed to hold the feet to the fire of the people who build and operate them to make sure they're safe. And particularly trains and planes, who are used by third parties. So trains are used by people who transport them. They're used by it's a shrinking audience of people who ride in them. And it's also affecting the people who the train passes by, you know, the communities through which these trains pass. And the safety of trains can be seriously impacted by how they're operated. And, for instance, freight trains. You know, this freight, we talked about it before, but this Palestine freight train was 12,000 feet long. That's 2 miles.
Yeah, 150-some-odd cars.
It's 2 miles long. So just think about something that someone is either pulling or pushing that involves that many cars, that many couplings, that many particular pieces of equipment that need to operate safely and correctly.
So regulations, somebody changed the regulations because they used to not allow 150
right.
car rails. And we do know that clearly the lobbyists that represent the rails, the railroads,
right,
were able to convince Congress that it cost us too much money. When you cut us down, we can make more money and save more money if you allow us to double the length of the railroad cars.
I talked on Monday about how I thought that proper and reasonable and adequate regulation was a bedrock of the American economy. It's a bedrock of the brand, the American brand, so that, you know, the FDA's adequate regulation of food and drugs is why people trust food and drugs, finance.
All right, hold the thought, Sandy. 844-967-2789 is the number. You can join us. It's Friday. That's Fridays with Sandy Williams and you. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. I'm pretty sure of it now, Sandy.
Yeah, that is Friday?
Yeah.
That's Sunday. Yeah, Sandy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So before the break, we were talking about regulations,
yes.
Adequate regulations, what was it that caused the pallet?
Well, they kind of know.
Yeah, well, they know that it was an axle that overheated, but a train with that many cars in it is going to have a bigger accident, a bigger problem than a train with fewer cars in it, or a train that is maybe operated differently in terms of the push-pull mechanism. I just have been reading now about how it is that freight trains are fairly complicated because each car needs to be separately monitored so that people can understand whether the car is lagging or leading. Is it pushing into the car ahead of it, or is it lagging and being pulled by? And that has an impact on what happens when the train comes to a stop or when it comes to a turn. So I had no idea there was quite as much complexity as there is. But all of this complexity is subject to being regulated. And, you know, the what's happened over the last 30 years in Washington is that through the power of probably K Street, the industries that are regulated have been able to secure relaxation of the regulations that are there basically to protect the public, but also to protect them. It's, you know, so that, for instance, just yesterday the Dreamliner production was again suspended by Boeing. Now, this one is supposedly for short purpose, but it's a regulatory problem. And we all know that Boeing was limping badly and in severe financial problems as a result of the Dreamliner failures, which were a failure of regulation, basically. And the regulation, if it had been proper, would have protected Boeing financially from all those problems. They saved some money in the regulatory process and lost a ton of money when the planes that they ultimately started producing proved to be unsafe.
You know, Sandy, getting back to the regulations with the railroads, I was reading where the tracks themselves and cameras can sense stress on the brakes on each car.
Really?
And they sensed, they were able to detect that right where that came apart, it was up to 258 degrees. Normally it's at 38, but they could sense that the stress, and they can show exactly where this started to get to where it was. So they've got regulations to the degree that they can sense this, and by the time the people up front, the engineers, were able to determine this, it's 150 some odd cars, they can't break it.
Right. I mean, the fact is apparently that the crew on this train discerned the fact that this bearing had failed and this axle, and the axle was overheating, and they let them know, and they'd begun to break the train. But the train was not subject to being safely stopped, and they had the derailment. But, you know, it was a function of, first of all, what kind of stuff were they carrying in the train? What kind of danger did it pose? And then if you put that kind of stuff into a train that's 2 miles long, how safely can it be operated? So, all of that stuff is the subject of government regulation, and presumably, and those regulations, I don't know railroad regulation enough to talk about, dot the I's and cross the T's about it, but I do know that the regulations were materially relaxed over the last period of time, including during the Trump administration.
So Sandy, that's the root of all of it. The discussion you and I just had,
yeah,
those are the discussions they had, and even in more depth, when they made the decision to extend the how many cars can be on the train. Well, I'm sure people said, hey, these things could happen, and people had to make a decision, yay or nay.
Oh, in fact, that's what regulation. I was operating in the electric industry. Every industry that's regulated is regulated according to costs and benefits, and the public benefits need to be evaluated, and then also the cost of securing those benefits needs to be evaluated, and the importance of the function that's being regulated to the public needs to be evaluated, so that, you know, trains will always have an accident. There's always a potential risk of accident of trains. Trains do need to operate. Now the question is, what kind of regulations are reasonable to protect the public? And that's where K Street plays a role, because they're constantly arguing it's too expensive, it's too expensive.
So, speaking of K Street, this is Marco Rubio, of all people. This is what happens when workers become line items on a spreadsheet, and a small town becomes nothing more than a dot on a map and an ocean of consumers. Of all people, Marco Rubio. The Biden administration and Norfolk Southern Railway need to do right by the people of East Palestine, and it's time lawmakers do the right thing by the American people. For decades, our policies prioritized efficiency over resiliency and rewarded globalism instead of patriotism. That needs to change. We cannot allow ourselves to become a country that values sales and deliveries more than the lives of our citizens and health of our communities. If we do, more disasters are sure to follow. That's Marco Rubio.
Well, you know, a good politician armed with platitudes can jump on any issue and take a position. You know, like they say in warfare, there's no atheists in a foxhole, and there's no anti-labor people in the time of a public disaster. Marco Rubio, however, I'm confident, is not going to vote on behalf of union rights when the time comes to it.
We got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Sandy's coming. Let's put something in for Sandy. Lulu.
This is not Singing in the Rain. Nice 1940s movie.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. This was especially for you, Sandy. I thought about you, and I said, well, you'd probably want to hear Lulu.
That's when I woke up this morning. If you knew Lulu, like I knew Lulu.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Let's go directly to the phone lines. Hey, David, what's going on, man?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Happy Friday to you all. And really quickly, before I get into the weeds here, I'm already making a prediction. I think Marquette basketball, the team that they have this year, I think they're going to make the Final Four.
No question.
They are outstanding, and I can't believe that the news media doesn't talk about them more.
Well, let me say this. It's a tribute to Shaka Smart, and I remember when they made the decision to hire him, there was a lot of pushback on it because the guy who was coaching before him, people liked him, and he was a decent coach, but clearly, when they made the decision to change everything and go with Shaka Smart, it changed everything.
Yeah. It's nice to see. Anyway, so I just wanted to just touch base with the East Palestine in Ohio. I think the frustrating part is this. Yes, I do recognize the fact that the Trump administration did pull back on some of the deregulation with especially with the railroads.
Okay, so let me ask you before you go any further, David. So before you go any further, why was he there talking about Trump water?
Trump water, you said?
The Trump water and
yeah, well, it's a photo op. I mean, he is a
master.
Yeah, I was joking with Earl before, Dave, saying I'm surprised he didn't show up with Trump towels, paper towels, or Trump tissues, kind of like with the Puerto Rico incident.
Yeah, he is.
But back to the bigger point, though, I think what's frustrating, though, on my side of the ledger is this, is that the response, though, the fact that it took FEMA almost 2 weeks to get out there, that should not have happened. I think that there should be more. Now, granted, we could argue about the whole parameters with the regulation, but the response was very, very, very poor. These people have been suffering quite a bit with burning eyes, and their chests are, like, on fire.
So what could FEMA do to change that, David?
Well, they are supposed to, I mean, in this case, at a disaster or any other events like this, they should have as much response medical people on staff to make sure that, you know, nobody's going to get hurt, they won't get sick.
Let's say that, Dave, I don't disagree with you that FEMA seems to fail most tests when it gets them. You know, some of the worst have been the hurricanes back a couple of decades ago when they really fell on their face. But But to me, the failure of FEMA reflects this long-term attack on government processes. So FEMA is an example of the most one of the most fundamental government tools, right? People expect the government to be able to deliver to it effective emergency service when emergencies occur, but that means that you need to have
resources.
You need to have effective government. You need to have resources properly applied. You can't attack the reputation of government and expect to have the best personnel signing up to work for the government. I mean, when I was a young guy, the top lawyers out of law schools wanted to go to a top law firm or they wanted to go to the U.S. Justice Department. That was one of the top, reputationally, one of the top places to work. That isn't the case anymore. And that isn't the case in the IRS or any place else. So, I mean, you know, our government has fallen into disrepute. And it's been a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not sure that when Reagan started the attack on government, it had depreciated to the point that it has now. I think it was a loop.
Hold on, David. Let Sandy finish.
No, I'm done.
Okay,
I'm done.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead, David.
You know, the governor of Ohio did request fairly quickly, and he was denied initially. And I think that that was one of the things that, you know, if we're going to come together as a country, we have to realize, listen, I feel horrible for those people down there. I mean, their homes and everything, I mean, it's going to take a long time for it to get back to normal over there.
So, David, let me say—
not saying that it can't happen,
let me say this to you, man. It's kind of where I have a problem with this. FEMA's going to be—what happened in Minnesota, they're going to be requesting FEMA. Things going on out west with the storms we're dealing with right now, they're going to be requesting FEMA. You can't handicap government, which is what Sandy is saying. Government is so, we don't need government. Government is, and then there are people who are clamoring for less and less resources for government, and then expect government to all of a sudden show up with bells on.
I think the problem is that the failures of government are easy to find, and then, however, we need to be able to, and some people will take the failure of government as further reason to stop funding the government, right? So the government isn't a good operation, so let's get rid of it. It can't even do what it's supposed to do, which is a knee-jerk reaction, and people need to stand back and realize that we need to have very effective, when we decide to have government, we should decide to have very effective government, and we shouldn't decide to have government and then tie its hands behind its back because we begrudge them the dollars it takes to have effective government. And we ought to respect our government enough so that we pay attention to it, and the politicians can demand efficiency. Efficiency is a very important thing to have in our society, but the way we go at it now is to just rob the agencies of money and tell them then to do more for less.
Because, Sandy, we're caught in this thing that, okay, Joe Biden should have been there. Pete Buttigieg should have been there.
Well,
if they show up early, people are going to say they're there for photo ops. Republicans are now saying, we're caught up in that. Republicans are saying it's so politicized.
Well, but let's face it, FEMA's failures are not the failure of the administration that's sitting in place at the time. When a new administration comes in, they don't revamp the personnel of FEMA. They don't change all of the processes in FEMA. They have almost no impact on it at all in the moment. So how FEMA does is a function of what's been happening to government over a period of time. And so, you know, we overblamed George Bush II for the failures of FEMA during his administration, and we can overblame whatever administration is in power whenever FEMA doesn't do what it's supposed to do, because quite frankly, the administration doesn't have that much to do with how firefighting is done in the circumstance of brush fires in California.
So Sandy, the point I'm trying to make, David, and then you can chime in, is, again, whether it's Democrat or Republican in office, when things happen, we automatically say they're not doing what they're supposed to do because it's the Democrats. We're the Republicans.
Right.
Or it's the Republicans in office and the Democrats. That has vilified what they're doing, what they're attempting to do, because we get into this thing about, well, FEMA's not working because the Democrats are in charge.
Well, but the real problem is the underlying notion is that when government doesn't perform when it needs to, people decide that government isn't worthy of support, and that that whenever you tell the government to do something, it fails, so we ought to privatize it.
Right.
You know, I mean, no one's talking about privatizing emergency response operations because you really can't. No one's talking about privatizing interstate highway construction
and there's
management,
no money to be made off.
Well, you know, no, I mean, there could be, I suppose. But, I mean, the point is government has a role, and until both sides of the aisle are willing to recognize that we do need to have government, and when we have it, it needs to be adequately supported and made, and we need to assure its efficiency, then, you know, then we can get somewhere. But, unfortunately, Washington is subject to being pecked away at by people who believe that lower taxes are the end that justifies the means.
David?
Well, I will just say this. The amount of revenue that the federal government is collecting is greater than ever. And if you look at, you know, where we talk about efficiencies, it doesn't seem like that. It's always expand, and there doesn't seem to be anything. Well, let's look at like what Sandy's saying. Let's look at some efficiencies. Well, you know, maybe it's too bloated. Maybe that's one of the reasons
Shouldn't we start with the military budget on that, David?
Well,
yes.
Look at the reaction that we did with the Chinese balloon, and then after that we were shooting down $13 balloons with $400,000 missiles.
Yeah, no, we spent it was worse than that. Apparently, I read a report last week. We spent $1.5 million shooting down the three balloons that ended up not being related to China at all. They were recreational balloons or whatever. So, you know, I think that to the extent that we talk about bloat, that, you know, you said we're collecting more revenue than ever. Okay, but the fastest growing part, other than healthcare costs, of the budget is the military budget. So, if to the extent we're bloated, that's what's going up. If you look at other programs, most of them are not going up in cost. I'm confident that railroad regulation costs have not been bloating. Okay, my guess is that on an adjusted real dollar basis, most of our regulatory costs have been going down, not up.
But Sandy, I will say again, and David, even with the thing with the balloons,
yeah,
this is the government. I mean, our country is so bogged down with Democrats and Republicans split down the middle that one of the reasons, that Joe Biden knuckled under when it came to the balloon, Sandy, is he left it alone. But public scrutiny and the pressures from Republican elected officials was, hey, the sky is falling. Joe Biden's not doing anything, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Well, there's no telling. There might be nuclear waste in the balloon. And so then they turn around and respond to this, which they shouldn't have had to have done, right? I mean,
No, absolutely. I mean, the problem is that we don't have people accepting that there need to be government functions and then evaluating how we should spend our money and what government functions we have and then making sure that we do them well and efficiently. That isn't the discourse at all. We have broad, sweeping arm discussions, and I don't blame David, but you just said, you know, that we're collecting more revenue than ever, government's bloated, we ought to cut it. Okay, that really doesn't say much other than the fact that maybe that's the kind of rhetoric that cuts taxes. But the question is, where should we be spending money? How much should we be spending on it? Why are we spending it there? And are we accomplishing the objectives that are good for the American people in that context? We should have that conversation, break it down in that way, and we never have that conversation.
David, quickly.
So I would just say this. The government has been causing a lot of issues as far as everyday Americans in a lot of different ways.
Like what?
And at the end of the day, well, if you look at what happens, just you look at the with the lobster situation out in Maine, and you look at the people who are working out there, and they're being gone after with the federal government with the lobsters, and you have farmers. They're going after farmers with I forgot what it was now, but there was something that just came out.
Hey, David, we got to go, man. Thank you very much for the call. It's time to listen to Lulu. go to a break. We'll be right back.
I've been trying to get to you for a long time, 'cause constantly you've been on my mind. I was thinking about a shortcut I could take, but it seems like I made a mistake. Well, I was wrong. Ooh, it took too long. I got caught in
the Young Rascals, 1965, Expressway to Your Heart.
You know that because you chose this music.
Right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Now, I didn't know. I wouldn't have known the year.
Uh-huh. But you would have known the answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, not to worry. Florida, mm-hmm. once again. Permitless carry. You don't need to pass any tests, anything. Florida is moving towards making it possible for people to just carry guns, you know, in the public, no permits. You know, they've got Republican legislature. It's going to pass. They got Ron DeSantis.
I mean,
and people are going to be able, to their heart's desire, well, everybody's going to have a gun.
Well, what's your point, Earl? I mean, everyone, of course, isn't the answer more guns? I think personally that everyone should have a gun. Every purse should have a gun. Every hand should have a gun in it. As I was saying to you off the air, maybe the perfect 16-year-old gift for my grandchildren will be, I'll get them a handgun, because clearly handguns appear to be the answer to all things. And of course, we can't have people checking their guns at the door, because it turns out that most people get shot in these mass killings indoors. Yeah. So if they had their guns with them, maybe, but they wouldn't have been shot, or maybe we'd just have more killings, wouldn't we? I mean, maybe when my 16-year-old got angry with somebody, instead of possibly thoughtlessly and without forethought punching someone in the nose, you'd simply pull out your gun and kill them.
You know, Sandy, it is almost incomprehensible that this just doesn't change. Let's do this. Let's go to Dan in Racine. Hey, Dan, how you doing? From Racine.
Hi, Earl.
Hi, right, what do you say?
I'm a new listener to your show.
I know you're a new listener. Thank you very much. You guys just joined us.
My name is Dan, and I'm a recovering Republican, just so you know.
Okay, all right. You're welcome.
And
well, you're welcome, Dan.
I have a few comments to make on both the last caller and your topic here. I've been in law enforcement on and off my whole life, and the reality of the situation is this, and that is you cannot cut your way out of common sense things. If you want a government to respond to what you need, whether it's an emergency of any kind, you cannot cut your way out of getting that taken care of properly. Number two, FEMA is on a shoestring budget. FEMA relies on more volunteers than most government agencies do, because they don't get the money they need to do their job correctly. Period. End of discussion.
Dan, Sandy, you want to respond to that?
Well, no, Dan, thank you. I don't have enough knowledge to have concrete examples like you do. But what is very apparent is that the whole strangulation of government and strangulation of money, you know, it's like defunding cities ends up defunding police forces. And we can talk about, well, people want to defund the police force. But no, we need to have adequate funding for the functions we want to accomplish. And then we need to oversee those functions to make sure that they're properly performed. But it's not about just strangling government of money. And so, Dan, I hear you.
And you know, Sandy, the only way you can do that is that government has to receive money in order to do the things that we asked them to do.
Well, we have to reverse the trend that was started in the 1980s, which is that government's the enemy. We have to respect the notion of government, and we have to appreciate the services that government can and should provide us. And we need to do that before we can undertake the adequate funding of it. Because in today's world, where the political position is to be skeptical of the value of government, then of course it's very easy to not fund that government, because you know you can say things like government's bloated. We need to cut money out of it.
Dan, thank you very much. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There's another situation, and that is: have you guys heard of Trinity Industries? Do you know who they are?
I've heard of Trinity International. I don't know if that is the same company.
Trinity Industries is the largest train car manufacturer in the United States. Back in the 90s, I worked security for them on a part-time basis, and the average train car that is on, or was at that time, on the track is 25 years of age or older. That's how long, on average, an average train car is on the rail. That is unacceptable. When we were making high-quality steel, it was a lot different. They lasted longer. Most of our steel comes from Japan or other places, from cars that we crushed out of our junkyards and then ship over there and then buy back that steel, and it is inferior to what we made here in this country. So you cannot leave a train car on the tracks that's rusting away and then change the wheels maybe every couple years, maybe a bearing here and there, and expect that it's going to operate like it should. It just doesn't work that way. They don't want to spend the money because they have people they have to answer to, shareholders, whatever. And when you deregulate, that money is not going on those tracks. It's not going into those train cars or maintenance of that. It's going to somebody else's pocket.
Hey, Dan, thank you very much for listening. Welcome to Civic Media. Racine and Kenosha, we're happy to have you guys on board, and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Got to go to a break. Gary, I see you. We'll come to you after the break, 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you.
Come on, take it my direction.